Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, it's about 10 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 163 in the series. Today is March 18th, and to my right is the vivacious, very effervescent Lisa Wolf, my co-host. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. I'm excited to get this show on the road.
We have a new producer starting with us tonight, and she'll be with us every Saturday and Sunday. It's Shanta Garth, and we want to say hi to Shanta on there. Hi, Shanta. How are you? Doing good? All right. She's doing good.
And we're so happy to have you.
Yes, we are. We're very lucky. And we have a brand new producer who's going to make us sound good. That's a tough nut to crack, but we'll try to make it happen.
Okay.
All right. On this edition, it's The Shadow from 1938. Orson Welles stars as Lamont Cranston. Then it's Father Knows Best with Robert Young. And then Murder by Experts, Good Mystery. All of this brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. All right, jingle.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama The Beguiled, a remake of the 1971 drama that starred Clint Eastwood.
Mm.
And if you are the winner, you get a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, which is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza.
Will you deliver the pizza?
I will deliver it personally.
All right. Mm-hmm. Call us 312-981-7200 if you know the answer. Here's a hint. This actress was the star of To Die For.
On TV is where we learn about who we really are. Because what's the point of doing anything worthwhile if nobody's watching?
This is true, right, Lisa?
I agree.
All right, if you know who that actress is, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop and having a little fun here. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
On TV is where we learn about who we really are. Because what's the point of doing anything worthwhile if nobody's watching?
And we have Ed on the line. Hi, Ed. You there?
Hang on a second. Ed.
Where's Ed? Hi, Ed. Do we have him? Ed. No, yes.
He's there. We got to just put him on. Shanta, can you put Ed on?
We're getting there.
Hang on.
We need a little Ed.
There he is.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. How are you?
Very good.
Good. It's great to hear from you. And we're wondering if you know who that actress is.
That was Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman is absolutely right. Ed, you are a winner. We are so happy to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. It is worth $25, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. And you never know, I might just be delivering the pizza to your door. Who knows? That would be a treat.
Oh, yum.
That would be a surprise for sure. Ed, thanks a lot for calling in, and we hope you'll stay up with us tonight and listen to The Shadow.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ed.
All right, it's time for The Shadow, one of radio's most popular mystery detective shows. And Orson Welles was radio's first Lamont Cranston. Agnes Moorehead, who played Endora on Bewitched, was the first Margot Lane. And now it's me and you as Lamont and Margo. Lisa.
Exactly.
We were on radio, but
right,
it's
same thing.
75 years later.
Right.
And, of course, Lamont Cranston learned the secret of invisibility. He could cloud your mind, and he used this power to fight crime.
Like you.
Yeah,
cloud
Bill Johnstone. Yeah, Bill Johnstone was the second Lamont Cranston, then John Archer, who was Ann Archer's father, the actress Ann Archer,
sure.
And then Brett Morrison. And Margo Lane was the only person who knew his identity, and it lasted on radio until 1954. We have a great radio broadcast for you now called The Blind Beggar Dies, and it stars Orson Welles along with Margo Stevenson. This is from April 17, 1938, part one now of The Shadow.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Using advanced methods that may ultimately become available to all law enforcement agencies, Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard. As haunting to superstitious minds as a ghost. As inevitable as a guilty conscience. The identity of the Shadow is known only to his intimate friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, The Blind Beggar Dies.
There are smiles that make us happy. There are smiles.
Evening, Singing Jim. Oh. Chilly tonight, isn't it?
Indeed it is. Thank you, sir. There are smiles.
Hello, Jim. Wish me luck tonight. I'm going out with a new boyfriend. He's awful nice.
All the luck in the world, you miss. Thank you. There are smiles which make us happy.
Well, if it isn't Singing Jim holding down the same corner after we told him to pay protection or move.
Yeah,
he don't pay off and he don't scare.
I don't make enough to keep body and soul together. Now you go away. Let me alone.
Oh, so you're going to try to buck our record, eh? All right, Marty, bring him back in the alley.
And I'll wait.
Here we can make him see things
now
out.
Now, take your hands off me. You let me alone.
Come on,
let
don't.
Me alone.
We just want to talk to you a minute. We got a proposition for you.
But now I told you, I don't need protection. I have a license because I'm blind. The police don't bother me, none.
Bring him back over here, Marty.
Oh, no.
Private enough.
Now, wait.
Okay, Spike.
Now, wait.
Leave me on that blackjack.
Shut up and hold your mitt over his mouth so we don't let
now,
him.
Now, don't.
Support.
Okay. I'm an old man. I can't stand it. I haven't any money to pay you. I tell you, I'll...
All right, give him the once over.
Right. Now, listen, Singing Jim. Next time you fork over a buck a week or you'll get the works. Okay. Marty, dump him over the wall there and let's go.
Gathering them
on. Yes.
Isn't it amazing how any little thing can get a crowd together?
Sometimes those little things turn out to be big things, Margo.
That's just Lamont Cranston, the amateur criminologist, coming to the fore.
Oh, look. They're trying to get into that alley where somebody heard, probably.
Oh, yes.
All right, move on.
Good evening to you, Mr. Cranston.
Oh, what's wrong, Clancy?
Oh, it's poor old Singing Jim. Somebody found him in the alley all smashed up. Looks like a truck run over him. All right, out of the way. Move on now. Move on.
Poor old Jim. Lamont, look at his face and head. He doesn't look like he's been run over.
Oh, don't hit me. I can't pay. I can't. I can't.
Okay, Jack, back to the hospital and make it fast.
Oh.
This old boy's in a bad way.
Lamont, somebody beat him up. But who'd do a thing like that and why?
I don't know, Margo. I've known Singing Jim for years.
So have I. Everybody knows him and helped him out.
Margo, he looked pretty bad. I think I'll go to the hospital and see what I can do for him. It's more than this than meets the eye. Want to come along?
Yes, Lamont. I hope we're not too late.
Of course you can see Singing Jim, Mr. Cranston.
How is he, Doctor?
Triple concussion. Looks pretty hopeless.
Poor old Jim.
How did it happen?
Well, the police report lists it as a hit-and-run case. In my opinion, he was beaten with some blunt instrument. Piece of pipe or a blackjack.
Hmm.
He's right in here.
No, no. Don't hit me. I'm an old man. No.
I'm afraid you won't get much out of him, but you can try. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Thanks, Doctor.
Oh, I can't pay. I need protection.
Not singing, Jim.
I don't...
Jim, it's Lamont Cranston.
Oh.
I've come to help you. And Miss Lane is here, too.
Oh.
You remember her.
Hello, Jim. What happened? Who did this to you?
Oh, keep away from me. Let me go. Don't hit me again.
I'm afraid he's delirious, Margot. No, Jim, listen. We're not going to hurt you. You're safe now. Who hit you? Why did they do it, Jim?
They told me I had to pay $1 a week. Or they'd give my corner to somebody else. Some phony that knew how to mooch enough to pay him for protection. No,
Jim.
Don't hit me.
Oh, Lamont, that can't be true. Nobody could be as low as to try to make a racket out of begging, organize them, and make them pay tribute.
It is hard to believe, Margot, but there must be something to it. Wait a minute. Jim, listen to me. Who did this? Who's been trying to make you pay money to them?
Oh, no, don't hit me, Spike. Let go of me, Mark. Don't, I can't pay. Apple Mary can't pay either. You took Apple Mary's stand. Now you're trying to take mine. Don't hit me again. Don't.
Lamont, I'd better get the doctor. He's unconscious.
Yes, Margot, but I'm afraid it's more than that.
What?
I'm afraid singing Jim has sung his last ballad.
What? You mean...
Yes, Margot. Singing Jim is dead.
Folks, I guess you're all kind of wondering why the word went out over the beggar's grapevine for us to meet here in my place.
Yes, you was wondering.
And maybe you ain't. Anyway, Apple Mary's got something to say to us.
Thanks, Lame Bill. Thanks. Folks, I guess by this time you've all heard that poor old singing Jim's dead.
Yeah, well,
and I guess you know why he's dead.
Yes,
sir.
Now, don't get the idea that I've asked you all here to fight these here scurvy rats that pull Jim into an alley and beat him to death. I ain't asking that.
Can't expect no help from the police, Mary. You know that.
No, you can't, Mary.
Yes, we tried that. And they just laugh at the idea of anybody trying to make us pay for the right to make a living on the streets. The only way we know how. Selling apples like I do. Singing like Jim did. Or selling pencils and shoelaces like Lame Bill here. No, we can't expect no help from the police.
Yeah, but why don't they get the guys that murdered old Jim?
They're investigating it, so they say.
Yeah, but what are we going to do, Mary? Jim's death was just a warning to the rest of us. It means pay up or get the same...
No, it don't.
Yeah, that's
no,
what
it
means,
don't.
Mary.
Because something's happened. Somebody's going to help us what can't help ourselves.
Well, who is it, Mary?
Now, before I tell you, I want to remind you that I am not a drinking woman, and I ain't given to hearing things, and I ain't easy convinced. But last night, late, somebody talked to me at my stand. Somebody that you've all heard of. Somebody that you that have got your eyesight don't believe in because nobody's ever seen him.
Who was it, Mary?
The Shadow.
Shadow? Oh, he wouldn't bother trying to help folks like us, Mary.
Oh, you're wrong. You're wrong because he asked me to call all your folks together. He promised that he'd come here tonight and tell us how he can help us.
When's he coming? Why isn't he here?
Hey, what's that?
Huh? I am here.
Why? Where'd that laugh come from?
Sounds like it come from right behind Mary.
No, it came from back in that corner.
Wait, don't be frightened. I am the Shadow. I've come here to help you. If you will accept my unseen presence without question, without fear.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We got no reason to be scared of the Shadow. We ain't done anything wrong.
Yeah, we ought to be glad he's willing to help us out, protect us from fellas like Spike and Marty.
Maybe he can help us find out who those fellas are.
Wait a minute, all of you. I've told the Shadow all I know about Spike and Marty. All any of us knows. Now you listen to what he wants us to do.
You are victims of the meanest racket in the world. The Shadow will help you if you are willing to help yourselves. I have reason to believe that one among you is a spy, an informer.
Why, where is he? Point him out.
No. No sooner or later, he will betray himself. There are too many of you for me to single out the one hostile mind in this room.
What do you want us to do, Shadow?
We'll do anything you say.
Go on doing as you have been doing. When these men approach you again, pay them, or promise payment. Then go to the west wall of the National Armory. Make your sign of distress in white chalk, using the symbols you use in communicating with one another. The Shadow will understand them and come to your aid. As for the informer in your midst, let him take this warning to the petty racketeers he serves. If one more cent of tribute is levied, they so much as lay a hand upon one of you, they will answer to the Shadow with their lives.
Yeah, who's there? That you, Marty?
Yeah, it's me, Spike.
What took you so long? Say, you look like the real McCoy with those smoked glasses and that crutch.
I used to make a living faking this blind and lame gag before you showed me how to make some easy money.
Well, what happened at that meeting at Lame Bill's place?
Plenty.
You look like you've seen a ghost.
No, I ain't seen no ghost, Spike.
What then?
I heard something tonight that I don't want to hear again. The voice of a guy you couldn't see. He was right there talking to us.
You've been hearing things.
No, it's the truth, I tell you. You've heard about this guy they call a Shadow, haven't you?
Yeah, I've heard about him all right. So what?
He was at that meeting. That's why Apple Mary called it. The Shadow got the whole story out of her, how we worked this racket, and now he's out to get us.
How's he going to do it?
He got it all fixed for the beggars to put their distress signs on the wall of the National Armory. The first time we try to collect any more dough.
You say the Shadow got all the dough from Apple Mary?
Yeah, I tell you, we got to lay off.
And kiss all that money we get from the beggars goodbye? Not on your life.
Yeah, but Spike, the Shadow's poison. He's caught plenty of big shots with dough and their gangs. What chance have we got against a guy like that?
Listen, punk, you're all the gang I got, and I ain't in the big dough, but I'm plenty smart. And I got an idea how to get rid of this Shadow.
All right. How you gonna do it?
Listen, all we gotta do is get a hold of Apple Mary. Bring her up here to the hideout and keep her here.
Yeah, and get the Shadow plumb on our trail.
That's just what I want. And to be sure he does get here, you're gonna chalk up a message on the armory wall. You know the signs they use.
Yeah, I know them. But supposing you do get Apple Mary here and this Shadow comes after her, then what?
Then he's going to walk into the sweetest little trap you ever saw sprung.
But you can't see the guy.
I don't have to see him. All I have to do is hear him talk or laugh, the way they say he always does.
All right, Spike. Okay, I hope you know what you're doing.
I haven't given you a bad stare yet, have I? We'll grab Apple Mary tonight and bring her down here.
Tell you what, the bad guys, they always talk like that. We'll give Apple Mary and we'll bring them back here.
You're pretty good
at that. Those are all the bad guys.
At that bad guy conversation.
Yeah. If I was in the old-time radio days, I'd be the bad guy.
I know you would.
All right, that's the first portion of The Shadow with the Blind Beggar Dies. We'll get back to it in a few minutes, but first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, we were tuning into The Shadow. June 26, 1938. This is called The Blind Beggar Dies. Here's the conclusion starring Orson Welles, The Shadow.
Why did you want to drive past the National Armory, Lamont?
I'm looking for handwriting on the wall, Margot.
What do you mean?
The Shadow made arrangements with Apple Mary and her friends to communicate with them. That way, those racketeers try any more strong-arm tactics.
Do you think they will?
Yes. There's a reckless bravado about a petty criminal that you won't find in big-time crooks.
And they're just as dangerous. Don't forget that, Lamont.
I'm not forgetting it for a minute, Margot. There's a saying, little snakes are more deadly than the big ones. Stop the car, Margot. Here's the armory.
What is it, Lamont?
There's writing on the wall. Maybe what I'm looking for.
You mean those chalk marks, those crosses and circles and numbers?
Yes. Yes, it's a message from Apple Mary. She needs help. She's waiting for the Shadow in the basement of 19 River Street.
I'll drive you there, Lamont.
All right, Margot. But not all the way. Stop a block from that address and let me out.
Very well, Lamont. Shall I wait for you?
Yes, Margot. Wait half an hour. If I'm not back by then, notify the police to raid that house.
But why, Lamont? What made you think...
I don't think Apple Mary sent that message, Margot. I have a feeling the shadow's being invited to walk into a trap.
That you, Marty?
Yeah, it's me. Where are you? How about some light?
Okay, I just wanted to be sure.
Hey, what's the idea? We're sitting down here in the dark. Hey, what are you doing with that Tommy gun?
When the shadow comes here looking for Apple Mary, I'm going to spray this room with lead from floor to ceiling. It won't matter if I can't see him. I can't miss. And our troubles will be over.
I put that message in the armory wall.
How long ago?
About an hour.
Then he'll be here soon. That guy moves fast from what I hear.
Hey, how are you going to know when the shadow gets here? What if he don't talk or laugh?
He's got to open that door, ain't he? He can't walk through it. He ain't a ghost.
He comes as close to being a ghost as anything I ever want to run up against. How's he do it? How does he keep you from seeing him?
By hypnotism, whatever that is.
Yeah? I know a guy in a circus that could do that. Leastwise, he claimed he could.
Shut up. Go and get Apple Mary in here. She's in that back room.
Okay. Hey, you. Apple Mary. Come on out here.
I'm coming. Don't think I'm scared of the scum of the earth like you two.
Pipe down.
What do you want with me?
Bring her over here and shove her into this chair.
You hide him. Come on.
Take your hands off me. Maybe old and blind, but I take no guidance from scavengers.
Take that can away from her. She might get free with it.
Give me that stick.
I'll give it to you. Here, take it.
Why, you she-devil?
Put her in that chair and hold her there. Get your knife.
Come on, sit down there. Yeah, I got my knife.
Get it out. She tries anything when the shadow turns up. Let her have it. Right between her shoulders.
Okay. If you know what's good for you, you'll sit still, Mary.
The shadow. So you know he's after you. So there was a squealer at the meeting.
That was no squealer. It was me. We're expecting your pal, the shadow, most any time now. I put a little message from you on the armory wall, telling him to come here.
Yeah. Just wait till that door swings open. That's the only way you can get in or out.
If this shadow guy's got a gun, starts blazing away, you'll get yours, Mary.
The shadow doesn't need a gun.
Shut him up, Marty. I just heard the basement door close.
Hey, somebody's in the hall, Spike.
Shut up. Watch it, old dame. If she opens her mouth, better have it.
Right. Got that Tommy gun ready?
Yeah.
Spike, he's here. The shadow's here. Do something. Do something. Shoot her. He'll kill it.
I ain't sure. If I could only be sure.
There is only one certainty in life.
What?
That is death.
It's him. Shoot Spike. Hey, Spike. Spike, you shut out the lights.
Yeah. But I got him.
Yeah.
I got the shadow. Come on. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, but what about Apple Mary?
We haven't got time to fuss with a blind dame. Now listen, Apple Mary. Get out and tell your friends we'll be seeing him. Tell him the shadow's dead. Tell him if we have any more trouble making collections, I'll get what Singing Jim and the shadow got. Tell him that for us. Come on, Marty, let's go.
Shadow, dear, who can we look to for help now?
You can still count on the shadow, Apple Mary.
Oh, Shadow, they didn't kill you. Didn't they hit you?
No, Mary. I suspected a trap, so after I opened the door, I walked across the room and stood behind them.
But your voice, it came from near the door.
Ventriloquism. A simple trick of projecting the voice. That doesn't matter now. Get out of here and hurry to Lame Bill's. Gather your friends together and wait there for word from me. The shadow.
Margot.
Oh, there you are, Lamont. I was beginning to get worried. Half hour's almost up. What happened?
I'll tell you later. Quick, start the car. See those two men hurrying down the street?
That tall one and the short, heavy one?
Yes, follow them, but be careful. Don't get too close.
Who are they? Where are they going?
They murdered Singing Jim. They tried to murder the shadow. We'll find out where they go, Margot, and then I'll telephone Commissioner Weston to surround the place.
The shadow left word with Apple Mary. She wants us at Dugan's Pool Hall.
Dugan's Pool Hall. The shadow's tracked down Spike and Marty.
Apple Mary and Lame Bill want us at Dugan's Pool Hall. Hey, Limpy, Dugan's Pool Hall right away. Mary said so.
what's the matter with you, Marty? I thought you could play pool. You missed that shot a mile.
I can't keep my mind on the game. Can't stop thinking about
it. Tom. Everything's okay, I tell you. I got the shadow I couldn't have missed. You heard him fall, didn't you?
Yeah, but
nothing. We got nothing to worry about, I tell you. The shadow's out of the way, and we got to pick Dugan for an alibi. We've been here all even. See? Here comes Dugan now.
Hey, Spike, Marty. There's something going on around here I don't like. I know I told you I'd frame an alibi for you, but I don't want no trouble. I don't want my place closed up.
What's the matter with you? What's going on?
It's that bunch you've been working your new racket on. Apple Mary, Lame Bill, Limpy, the whole lot of them.
What? Where are they?
They're out in the street, 20 or 30 of them. And more coming every minute.
Yeah, who tipped them up when he was here? Is this a double cross,
no,
Dugan?
No, honest. Somebody must have tailed you here. Listen to him.
Hey, Spike, they're after us. Come on, let's get out of here.
Yeah, maybe we better. They tear us to pieces if they got their hands on us.
You guys better slip out that back door there. It leads into the alley. The crowd may be lame and blind, but I don't give much for your chances if they get hold of you.
Come on, Spike, let's go, will you?
Yeah, okay, let's scram. We'll get these muggies tomorrow, one by one. I'll teach them to try to gang up on us. Come on, Marty, come on.
Hey, Spike, wait. Look down the alley there.
Holy cat. Cops?
Yeah.
Half a dozen of them.
We can't go that way, Spike. They're laying for us. Hey, Dugan, ain't there any other way out of this joint?
How about upstairs and over the roof?
No, that door to the hall has been nailed up for years. It's either the alley or the front way.
Hey, Spike, that bunch out front sound like they're coming in.
Yeah, we're caught like a couple of rats in a trap.
What are you going to do, Spike?
Shadow. Spike, did you hear that? It's the Shadow. It didn't get him. He ain't dead.
No, you will not go to the electric chair for the murder of the Shadow.
Well, so you got away. Well, then the cops haven't got anything on us now. Come on, Marty, we'll go out through the alley. Let the cops pick us up. They can't hold us more than 24 hours.
Wait. You've forgotten the murder of Singing Jim.
Well, you can't pin that on us. Well, the door's locked.
Yeah. And the key's gone, Spike.
Yes, I locked that door, Spike. I have the key. But the front door is unlocked. You can walk out that door. Singing Jim's friends are out there waiting for you.
Spike, what are we going to do?
They are the lame and the halt and the blind, but there's strength in their numbers. The strength of a long-suffering fury that means your death. If they get their hands on you...
What do you want, Shadow? What's your game?
I want your confession to the murder of Singing Jim.
Hey. Yeah? If we confess, will you keep that mob away from us?
I'm not confessing to anything. I'm not writing myself a one-way ticket to the death house.
Take your choice. A chance before a legal jury or that mob. Quick.
Stop him! Stop him, Shadow! I'll tell you. Yeah, we killed Singing Jim. It was Spike. He slugged him in that alley, yeah.
You dirty squealer, Ed.
Don't move, Spike. One false move.
Wait a minute, they're gonna...
These tormented people will kill you. Mary, Lame Bill. Wait, everybody. This is your last chance. There's a blackboard behind you, Spike. There's a piece of chalk. Write your confession to the murder of Singing Jim and sign it. Write what I dictate to you.
You win, Shadow.
We, Spike Grogan and Marty Nelson...
We, Spike Grogan.
Confess...
Marty Nelson.
That on Tuesday night at 5:00...
Confess that on... Tuesday
we
night.
Did willfully beat Singing Jim
we
to
did.
Death
willfully beat.
With a blackjack.
Singing Jim to death with a blackjack.
Sign it. Now you, Marty.
Okay.
There. Now watch, Shadow.
Walk to that back door. Open it. Call to the police in the alley. Tell them to come and get you.
Well, it's locked.
You locked it and took the key.
I unlocked it again. Go with Spike Grogan, Marty. Beyond that door, a blindfolded woman with a sword in one hand and finely balanced scales in the other waits for you. You've mocked her long enough. But she is patient, because her name is Justice. And her revenge for your mockery will be death.
You have been listening to a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
That is The Shadow from June 26, 1938, with The Blind Beggar Dies, starring Orson Welles. Did you like that, Lisa?
I liked watching you try to talk with licorice in your mouth better.
Well, Lisa bought me some licorice, and I put a piece of licorice in my mouth, and I didn't time it exactly
correctly.
I
love the sinister laugh.
Yeah. Who knows what evil lurks.
It's just classic. You're pretty sinister, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I are here all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll be back here tomorrow with more classic radio from 11 till 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know what? Next, tomorrow we have Suspense with John Garfield. You don't want to miss that. We also have the Burns and Allen Show and Fort Laramie, Lisa. So good Western. Your dad would like that. He likes the Westerns.
Well, I picked it for him.
Mr. Matenki.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Facebook page, right, and a text line, and you wanted to talk about that?
We sure do. We have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. We hope that you'll go there. Any comments, suggestions, questions, thoughts, you know, whatever's on your mind, we'll read it. That's on our Facebook page. We hope you like us as well. We have a text in line. It's the same as our call in line, 312-981-7200. Text us.
Yeah, if you have a question for us, if there's something you want to hear, just text us. We do read all of the texts, 312-981-7200.
Tell us what's on your mind.
See what I have here, Lisa?
I don't.
This is the new issue of Remind Magazine. Folks, if you don't know about this magazine, I really would love you to go online and just type in Remind Magazine, or just go to remindmagazine.com. It's a magazine all about nostalgia. And look who's on the cover, Lisa. Look how beautiful.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
Liz Taylor is on the cover. And they always have a theme every issue, and it's a monthly magazine, about 50 plus pages, full color magazine.
And you write for that magazine, which is really an amazing feat.
Yeah, I pay them to let me write for them.
I'm sure
how it works. It's always on page 17. My column is called Radio 360, and I take a celebrity and talk about his or her radio work. And in this particular issue, it's all about Elizabeth Taylor's radio work. She didn't do a lot of radio, but I talk about the episodes that she did appear in. But it's kind of interesting because Lux Radio Theater paid her more than any other actor to appear on Lux during the late run of the series.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is 12:08 on a Sunday morning, And Lisa and I will be here till 2 o'clock in the morning with you playing your favorite classic radio shows, all your favorites, Jack Benny, Inner Sanctum, Lights Out, The Whistler, Boston Blackie. You know, we get people every once in a while text us in and ask me to play Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Yes.
And I'm sort of hesitant to do it only because it's not a classic radio show. I mean, it is radio drama.
Oh, I know, right? What it is. You know, we played one at the beginning when we first started here at WGN early on in our days, and we got a lot of negative response.
Yeah,
not
complaints.
That it wasn't a good radio drama, but that it wasn't what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And they wanted to hear The Shadow and Father Knows Best and
yeah.
Suspense and Lights Out, and they were unhappy that we did that. So if you guys would like to hear it, let us know. If you don't want to hear that, let us know that too. And, you know, we'll gauge it that way.
Yeah. And just to be clear, Twilight Zone Radio Dramas was a series that I produced and licensed the rights from CBS and the Rod Serling estate to turn the Twilight Zone television show into a radio drama series. And I hired amazing actors all over Hollywood to appear in them. I mean, incredible actors, top name actors to appear in them. And then we used some of the great supporting actors like Lisa Wolf.
Who?
And but like people like Christian Stolte, who's on,
right.
You know, was his one of the members of
Chicago
Fire. Look,
there are a lot of great actors
and David
around
Pasquazi
here.
And
right.
Of course, Tim Kazurinski starred mm-hmm. in a few of them
yep.
as well. And they're very high quality productions, but they are not classic radio. They are new time radio dramas produced in the flavor of a classic radio show. They're an homage to these shows,
yes.
but it was done much later. It was done in 2000. I started doing them in 2002.
I mean, you were doing them when I met you.
Right.
That was about 2008.
So I'm happy to play. I'm happy to play one, but I just don't want to disappoint people.
No, let
because,
us know what you think.
Yeah, text us, 312-981-7200. In this hour, it's Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young, and it's brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This singer-songwriter stars in the upcoming war thriller Dunkirk, about the evacuation of soldiers from Dunkirk, France during World War II.
So this singer is now acting?
Yes, it appears that way.
Oh, okay. That's the way it goes, right?
Yes.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
Oh, $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati.
All right. This singer is the lead singer of One Direction. All right, who is that singer-actor? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
And we are back with the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time. And we have Jude on the line. Hey, Jude. How are you?
I can't think of the next Beatles line.
Don't be a fool, maybe, right? Take a sad song and make it better. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you much. Yourself?
Good, good. Good to hear from you. So who is that singer, songwriter, turned actor?
The only person I know on One Dimension and Harry.
Yeah, One Dimension.
He's got poofy hair.
Who is it? That's right.
He's got some poofy hair.
What's
for
his
sure.
name?
Harry Styles.
Harry Styles is the one. You are a winner. He's the only one I could think of right now, too. So you have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. And you have $25 to get a great pizza on us, so we hope that you enjoy that.
I can smell it now.
Me too, right? I can almost taste it. So take care, and thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jude. Appreciate it. All right, it's time for our second radio show of this edition, which is 163. Yeah, I think 163. That's closing in on 2 years here, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
2 years on the air pretty soon.
And we're still here.
Yes.
It's a good thing.
Well, Father Knows Best, everybody remembers it as a television show.
Yes.
But in fact, it started on radio in 1949. Robert Young starred as Jim Anderson. He was a general insurance agent. And his wife was named Margaret. Their daughters were Betty and Kathy. Their son was Bud. And it was pretty much typical sitcom fare, you know, a monkey would move into the house or,
I remember, you know, watching a that show, on
television. Or they'd get a dog and there'd be all kinds of problems.
Right.
And they'd name the dog Simba, you know, something like that.
Simba.
It lasted on radio to 1954. Of course, it was a huge television show. We have a radio episode for you now, November 2nd, 1950. This is called Too Many Problems. Here's part one of Father Knows Best.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons, brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House. The coffee that's always good to the last drop. In every week, there are 7 days. In every day, there are 24 hours. In every hour, there are 60 minutes or 3,600 seconds. That's a lot of time, isn't it? Time enough to do almost anything. Unless, of course, you happen to be a father. If you're a father, like Jim Anderson, there's never enough time. Never enough minutes or hours or days. That's why, as a conscientious father, you're forced to take steps like this.
And so, gentlemen of the Springfield Service Club, let's take a look at the record. Let's put a microscope on the past year and see exactly how much cooperation I've received.
Jim...
Honey, if you're going to keep interrupting me,
I'm sorry, dear, but microscope sounds so funny. Don't you mean magnifying glass?
Well, you're being very technical, Margaret. It's just a figure of speech, so what difference does it make which one I use?
Not a great deal, I suppose, except that when you say microscope, you think of germs.
And that's exactly what they are, a bunch of germs. Elect a man president and then don't lift a finger to help him.
I know, dear, but as long as you're going to resign...
Supposed to be such a great honor. I'd better wear this tie, huh?
Yes, dear, and I've laid your shirt out in the bed.
President of the service club. Just another way of saying I'm too tired. Let Jim do it.
Jim, if you want me to hear the rest of your speech...
They can get another president. He can do all the work. I'm going to stay home with my family. Where was I?
You were looking at the record.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's take a look at the record. Let's put a magnifying glass on the past year and see exactly...
Jim.
Yes, Margaret.
You were right. Microscope sounds better.
Thank you. Let's take a look at the record. Let's put a microscope on the past year and see exactly...
It's a very peculiar picture. I mean, putting a whole year into a tiny little microscope. But it does sound better when you say it.
Margaret.
Yes, dear?
This is a large microscope. The year size.
Well, let's not worry about it. It isn't very important.
Yes.
I won't interrupt you again.
Margaret, if there's anything else you'd rather do...
Jim, I'm trying my best to listen.
Oh, that's what you were doing.
Of course, if you don't want me to hear the speech...
I do want you to hear the speech, but we've been at it for 15 minutes and I haven't been able to get past the introduction. I'm so confused, I don't know if I'm getting dressed or undressed.
Mother!
I'm in the bedroom, Betty.
I think the string beans are burnt.
Oh, dear, I forgot all about them. I'll be right down.
Okay.
Between the string beans and Kathy's bath and Betty's fingernails...
Jim, just because you're going out to dinner, that doesn't mean that we don't have to eat.
I didn't say that.
I have 3 growing children to take care of, and they're going to be fed in spite of you and the service club.
I suppose I burned the string beans.
Well, they certainly didn't burn by themselves.
Now, there's logic for you. I'm going out to dinner, so I'm responsible for everything that happens in the house.
Blue sock, blue sock, blue sock. Why is it I can never... Bud!
You want me?
What happened to my... Oh.
What's that, Dad?
Never mind, I found it.
What?
I said never mind, I found it.
You found what?
My other blue sock.
I haven't got it.
I know you haven't, I just found it.
You did?
Yes.
That's nice.
I thought you'd be happy. I'll give you 10-1 right now. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. And so, gentlemen of the Springfield Service Club, let us take a look at the record. Let's put a microscope on the past year. Let's put a magnifying glass on the past year. Let's take a close look at the past year. Look at the record. Look at the year. Well...
Daddy!
Oh, no, not this.
Daddy, are you still here?
Me? Of course not. Didn't your mother tell you? I left 5 minutes ago.
What?
If you look out the window, you can see me just turning the corner.
You're kidding me.
Somebody told you.
Daddy!
Kathy, I haven't time to talk. I've got to leave in very few minutes.
Isn't that wonderful?
What?
Oh, I mean, going out for dinner and everything. That's what I meant, Daddy.
It is, huh?
Oh, yes.
I wonder. Kathy.
Yes, Daddy?
I've got to change my shirt and my trousers, so if you don't mind...
What?
Kathy, get out and close the door, please.
But I don't mind, Daddy.
Well, I do. Now, please get out and close the door.
Gee whiz, nobody ever lets me stay anyplace. All I do is get out.
Just like living in an alley, that's what it is. Give a man the privacy of a goldfish. Let's take a close look at the past year and see exactly how much cooperation I have received. As president of the local service club, I've neglected my family, my business, even my golf for the sake of this organization. Examine your own consciences and ask yourselves, what did I do to help? Now, what happened to the darn things? You can never find anything around here. Margaret!
She isn't here, Father.
Well, she was here 2 seconds ago.
She's trying to borrow some string beans from Miss Davis.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
String beans. I can't find my cufflinks, and she's gallivanting all over the neighborhood chasing string beans. Examine your own consciences and ask yourselves in the past year, what did I do to help? 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 Bud, he's taking those cufflinks again, so help me. Bud, come in here.
Okay, Dad, I'll be right in.
If I've told him once, I've told him 1,000 times. I couldn't have made it any plainer.
You want me for something, Dad?
How many times have I told you to leave my cufflinks alone?
Which cufflinks?
My gold cufflinks, the ones the service club gave me.
Oh, those.
Well?
I don't know.
You don't know what?
How many times you told me?
Then why did you?
Why did I what?
Take them.
Oh. I didn't.
But if you didn't take them, where are they?
Maybe Kathy took them.
I did not.
Well, if it isn't Millicent Mayflower, girl detective. Come in, Millie.
Did you call me, Daddy?
Kathy, aside from the fact that it isn't polite to drop eaves on people, what did you do with my cufflinks?
I didn't drop anything on anybody.
What did you do with my cufflinks?
What cufflinks, Daddy?
His gold cufflinks that the service club gave him.
I didn't ask you.
Kathy, where are my cufflinks?
The gold cufflinks that the service club gave you?
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, Kathy.
Gosh, Daddy, if I knew where they were, I'd be the first one to tell you. I can't afford to have you... I mean, you're almost late now.
I am not almost late. Dinner isn't until 7:30.
But you always leave here before 7. You have to leave before 7.
Why?
So you won't be late.
Kathy, why are you so anxious to get me out of the house?
I didn't say I was anxious. Father!
Just a minute, Betty. Kathy,
What fiendish little scheme is percolating in the back of your equally fiendish little mind?
Why, Daddy!
Now, you're up to something. You're up to no good, and I want to know what it is. Now what's the matter?
You're going to spank me.
I'm not going to spank you. I don't even know what you did.
Dad, is it all right if I go back to my room?
No, you stay right where you are.
But I have homework to do.
You can do it later. Right now, we've got to find my cufflinks.
Holy cow.
Father, now don't forget what you... What's the matter with her?
Daddy's going to spank me.
What for?
I don't know.
Betty, did you see Dad's cufflinks?
Nope. Father, don't forget you promised to drop the bridge tables and chairs off at the sorority house tonight.
I said no such thing. It was tomorrow night.
Father, they need them in the morning, and you promised.
I don't want you to spank me.
What if you don't ever find your cufflinks? Then what happens to my homework?
You said you'd take them, and they're counting on it. And if you don't, they won't ever speak to me again.
I'm going
to
be a hermit. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to grow a long white beard and live on top of a mountain in Tibet.
Mother, he said he'd take the tables and chairs over, and now he says he won't.
Margaret, so help me. I didn't...
Kathleen.
Daddy said he was going to spank me.
I said no such thing. Did I, Bud?
I was sitting in my own room, minding my own business.
He said last night he'd take the chairs over.
Betty.
But now he changes his mind, and I suppose...
Kathy.
Well, that's better. Jim, I've never seen it to fail. If I set one foot out of the house, absolute bedlam sets in.
That's not true. But if you're going to walk out in the middle of an emergency...
What emergency?
What emergency? The place is crawling with them. Why don't you take them one at a time?
All right, I will. Bud?
All I want to do is my homework.
Go down to the kitchen and watch the string beans.
Yes, ma'am.
Betty?
Father promised me...
You'd better set the table in the breakfast room.
But Father said...
We'll take care of the chairs later.
Jumping creepers.
Now... My two little ones.
Margaret, you realize that this whole thing is absolutely ridiculous.
Kathy.
Yes, Mommy?
Why were you crying?
I didn't want Daddy to be here at 7 o'clock.
Why?
Because that's when she's coming here to speak to him.
Who is?
My teacher.
Oh, that's what it was. Now, you see, Margaret? I had a feeling from the very beginning.
Jim.
Hmm?
What was your little problem?
My gold cufflinks are gone. They've disappeared. Vanished, that's all.
What are those in your cuffs?
What? Oh. How'd they get there?
Jim, I told you I'd laid your shirt out. I put the cufflinks in the shirt to save you a little time.
Well, Margaret, let's face it. That's a pretty silly place to hide cufflinks.
I can see you doing that to Dan, putting his cufflinks in his shirt, laying it out real nice for him.
Yeah, that's after I've ironed and pressed
it. Yeah, and starched it really nice.
Exactly. Now you got my number.
And made him a little sandwich for work. And
well, sure, I get up early.
Cut the crust
well,
off the
bread. Well, first I have to
make
breakfast and then make lunch. And probably, then I go right to dinner.
Do you peel the crust off the bread and then cut it real nice?
I do for my daughter. She still asks me to do both of those things.
All right. That's the first portion of Father Knows Best. Robert Young as the star of that. He was the star of the radio and TV show on November 2nd, 1950. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We've gotten a lot of people texting in if we should play Twilight Zone radio dramas or not.
We have a big difference of
opinions.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that want us to do it, and there's a lot of people that don't want us to do it.
Yeah, big controversy here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah, so I would say it's more that more people want us to than not want us
to. That's true, but the people who don't are very emphatic.
Yeah, they're like, you know what?
N-O.
We want the classic radio shows here. none of those new time radio dramas.
Well, they are very different.
I sort of lean that way. As much as I'm a huge fan of the series, you know.
There are a lot of purists out there.
Yeah.
And it just isn't what they want or expect, and I understand that.
Yeah. And then one person texted in and said, the young girl, Kathy, her voice is very annoying on Father Knows Best. I must agree. It kind of makes the fillings in my teeth want to pop out.
See, I think Father Knows Best is probably one of the radio shows that doesn't transfer to today as well as some of the others.
Yeah.
It's a little cornier.
Yeah.
It's a little corny. It's a little corny, but, you know, it's still a good, I don't know, I still enjoy it,
yeah.
But it's definitely a different period of time, and you have to be in that mindset.
Yeah.
Do I prefer some of the other ones more? I do.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it. But you know, some love
but
it
I
and
tell
some
you,
don't.
Here's the thing. I get a lot of requests. People want to hear Father Knows Best.
So, you
it's
know,
hard
we
to
try.
Please everybody.
We try. We do
we
our
really
best.
We really want to please everyone, but of course we can't. Lisa is better at pleasing people than I am, though, I'll tell you.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're not a pleaser, Carl.
No.
You're not a pleaser.
You know, if it were up to me, I would play Suspense and The Detectives. That's all I would play. I'd like the detective shows and the mysteries.
Okay, I vote for Our Miss Brooks, My Favorite Husband, a little Bickerson's, maybe My Friend Irma.
Yeah.
It's different than you would choose.
I'm not a big comedy fan.
You're not? No.
Not really.
No.
I do like Jack Benny. I think Jack Benny is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think Burns and Allen's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the rest of the comedies, I mean, I like them. I just don't. My favorite detective, of course, is Boston Blackie. I think he's the best. In fact, this week I taped a movie on Turner Classic Movies. It was Boston Blackie Booked on Suspicion or something.
Oh,
one of the
wow.
Boston Blackie movies.
Yeah.
Taped it, and I've been watching it. It's really great. Chester Morris was fantastic as Boston Blackie. Have you been watching this series, Feud?
I know with Susan Sarandon and Susan Sarandon what's her
plays
name from
Betty
Tootsie.
Davis. Jessica Lange.
Yeah.
So, but Betty Davis, I mean, Susan Sarandon plays Betty Davis.
I saw a few minutes of it.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
looking at her, she looks exactly like
she
her.
She does.
And then Jessica Lange plays Joan Crawford.
Right.
And this thing is amazing. Folks, if you have not seen it, it's about the making
of
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. That, you know, the movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Yep.
Really interesting story about how that movie came to be. It was something that Joan Crawford found, read the book, and thought this would make a great movie for herself and for her rival. They had never been friends. They were actually rivals.
They're still
throughout
rivals
the golden age of
throughout
radio.
This show.
Not really,
though.
They do band together a little bit in this. It's very interesting.
I watched for a while.
Yeah. There's only been two episodes.
I watched this last one.
There's one tomorrow. Episode 3 is tomorrow.
I watched episode 2, then.
But, folks, it's on FX. Yep. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it on demand. Watch Feud. It's fantastic. It's the story of Betty Davis and Joan Crawford and the making of the movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. It's really, really interesting. And they do a great job. It's the same producers that did the O.J. 10-part series that Cuba Gooding Jr. started and John Travolta and all that. Same group of producers. It's really well done. All right, let's get back now to Father Knows Best.
It's 7 o'clock in Springfield. Of course, it's 7 o'clock in other places as well. But in other places, the hour doesn't contain the same drama, the same suspense that it does in the Anderson Den. There, 7 o'clock is a magic hour, fraught with excitement and just a small touch of mystery, like this. Kathy?
Yes, Daddy?
What did you do in school?
I didn't do anything.
Jim, why do you immediately assume that Kathy has done something wrong?
Well, why else would her teacher want to see me?
Maybe she doesn't want to see you, specifically.
Yes, she does, Mommy. She said she had to see Daddy and she'd be here at 7 o'clock.
And naturally, she'd have to pick tonight.
Kathy, why didn't you tell us about this earlier?
Well, don't you have anything to say?
I'm trying to think of something.
Say, Mom, Holmes.
Bud, we're very busy in here. We've got problems.
So have I. If I don't finish my homework, how can I go to the movies with Joe Phillips?
You can't.
Well, then why can't I...
Bud, please go back to the kitchen and watch the string beans. We don't want them to burn again, do we?
Go ahead, Bud.
Holy cow. 15 years old and what am I? A string bean watcher.
Look, Kathy, I want you to think hard. Have you done anything wrong in school? Have you kicked any footballs through anybody's window?
You mean today?
I mean any day.
Jim, Mrs. Lindsay will be here any moment.
Margaret, I want to find out before she gets here. If Kathy's done anything and I can get it straightened out in advance, then I won't have to hang around and gab with Mrs. Lindsay. Kathy, please try to think. What could your teacher possibly want to see me about?
Well, maybe Mrs. Woody called her, but I didn't mean to do anything.
You and Jimmy had another fight, huh?
He said I was a tomboy, and I'm not a tomboy, and I just showed him I wasn't, that's all.
How?
I punched him in the nose.
Kathleen, after all the promises you made...
Well, he didn't have any right to say I was a tomboy, did he, Daddy?
I don't know, Kathy. Is that all that happened?
Except for his shirt.
What happened to his shirt?
I was only trying to lift him back on his feet. And I couldn't help it if it just ripped.
Margaret, what's the Woody's number?
Jim, don't you think if I call Dorothy...
I'll get it straightened out in 2 seconds. What's the number?
It's in the little book, dear, next to the phone.
By the time Mrs. Lindsay gets here, there won't be anything to talk about, and that'll be all right with me.
Kathy, why can't you ever learn to behave like a lady?
I was trying to be a lady, Mommy. I tried to help him up.
Oh, there it is. Get the little monster a new shirt, and everything will be right as rain. Hello, Dorothy. This is Jim Anderson. Just fine, thanks. Say, Dorothy, we're awfully sorry about... No, I hadn't heard about the school paper drive. I was just... No. Look, Dorothy, I was just... Yeah. Yes, I know how successful it was, but I don't have the time this year to... Dorothy, I just called to explain about Jimmy's shirt. You see, Kathy... What? Didn't Jimmy say anything about it? Well, I'm afraid it was Kathy's fault, and... Dorothy, if you'll just buy him another shirt and send me the bill, then I know it takes an experienced man, but I give you my word, Dorothy. Okay, as long as you put it that way. Yes, I'll call a meeting for next Monday night. You're welcome, Dorothy. Good night. Paper drive. 8,000 men in the neighborhood, and she has to pick on me.
Is everything all right, Jim?
Dorothy didn't know anything about Jimmy's shirt, but shake hands with the chairman of the school paper drive.
Jim, it won't do any good to give up your office in the service club if you're going to turn around...
It wasn't my idea, Margaret. She said I owed it to her on account of Jimmy's shirt. Well, what could I do?
Well, it'll only be for a month, and... Then you'll have all your evenings to spend with us.
Father, Bud and I put the bridge tables and chairs in the back of the car.
What for?
You said you'd deliver them.
I said I'd deliver them tomorrow, not tonight.
Mother!
Margaret, it's clear over on the other side of town. It'll take me all night.
I know, dear, but after all, Betty promised.
Please, Father.
All right. I'll take them over after I leave the dinner.
Oh, thank you, Father. You're a lamb.
I'm getting just a little tired of being led to the slaughter.
Daddy.
Yes, Kathy.
Maybe it was Stevie Long.
What about Stevie Long?
I didn't know it was his good sweater.
Margaret.
Kathy, did you tear Stevie's sweater?
Oh, no, Mommy. I was trying to fix it.
I can just see that.
Well, I didn't know that was the thread that held the sleeve on. And all I did was pull it a little bit.
Then Stevie just stood there and let you, I suppose.
He wasn't even there. I was holding the sweater while he went inside to get the baseball.
What baseball?
The one I hit through the living room window.
Kathy.
You said you hadn't broken any windows.
You said today. This was yesterday.
Oh, Kathleen.
And anyway, you said with a football, and this was a baseball.
Kathy, when are you going to realize that you're not a boy?
I don't know.
Is there any other child in Springfield who gets into half as much mischief as you do? Don't you know how to say anything but I don't know?
I don't know.
Margaret.
The Long's number is next to the phone, dear.
I know the Long's number. This is the fifth time we've had to pay for that same window. I ought to know their number by now.
This isn't the same window, Daddy. It's the big one in the front.
Well, that makes it much better. I don't know why I ever went into the insurance business. I should have opened a glass factory. Well, hello, Harry. Now, this is Jim Anderson. Well, I haven't had a chance to play much golf lately. I've been sort of tied up with... No, Harry, Harry, I just want to explain about the living room window. You see, Kathy was playing baseball. Yes, I know it's insured, but if I can just tell Mrs. Lindsay that we've got the whole thing... No, it isn't all right, Harry. I just as soon... Harry, I haven't got time to be on the Greens Committee. I'm going to resign as president of the... Look, Harry, I know that it... But I don't have one evening a week. I've got a family, Harry, and I don't see them from... Look, can I just send you a check for the window? Okay, Harry. 8 o'clock at your house on Wednesday. Yes, Harry. Okay, good night. I don't know. Every time I pick up the phone, I'm a member of something else.
Did you straighten everything out with Harry, dear?
Oh, sure. It was a plate glass window, and he's already collected the insurance. And now I'm a member of the Greens Committee at the golf club.
Jim, if this keeps up...
Every Wednesday night, what to do with the grass, where to put the cups, and who ran away with the trap in front of the 15th green. I'll probably wind up in back of a lawnmower.
Daddy.
I don't want to hear another word out of you.
But I just thought of something.
Jim, she's only trying to help you.
Oh, sure. She's helping me just fine. I'm a paper collector and a grass cutter, and I still don't know what Mrs. Lindsay wants.
I do.
Mom, the string beams are boiling over.
Oh, dear. I'll be right there, Bud. Now, Kathy, tell your father what you did and then wash your hands. Dinner's almost ready.
Yes, Mommy.
Well?
What?
What did you do?
Oh, I think I know what I did, but it wasn't my fault, Daddy.
Nothing is ever your fault. I've never seen a child who could do more things that weren't her fault.
Well, how did I know her father wasn't through with them?
Wasn't through with what?
The neckties.
What neckties?
The ones I told Laurie Hathaway to use.
For what?
To tie up the gold.
What goat?
The one I found in the lot.
You brought a goat over to the Hathaways?
Well, you wouldn't let me keep it here, would you? And I didn't know it was going to eat all Mr. Hathaway's flowers.
Oh, Kathy. What am I going to do with you?
Spank me?
Now I've got to call the Hathaways. And I don't care what committee he wants me to be on, I'm going to pay for the flowers and the ties, and that's all.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
Can you think of anything else?
You mean lately?
Margaret!
Oh, it's Mrs. Lindsay.
Did you call me, Jim?
Never mind. Never mind.
Hello, Mrs. Lindsay.
Kathleen, you sweet child.
Come in, Mrs. Lindsay. I've been waiting for you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. This is a very great pleasure.
Yes. Shall we go into the living room?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Lindsay.
About what, dear?
About whatever I did.
Mrs. Lindsay, I've been calling people all night.
Why, Kathleen, you haven't done anything, have you?
Haven't I?
Not that I know of.
Gosh!
Oh, wait a minute. If she hasn't done anything, what did you want to see me about?
Mr. Anderson, I have the most wonderful news for you. You've been elected president of the PTA. Congratulations.
Oh, no.
The night is dark, the clock strikes two, and the white frame house on Maple Street stands hushed beneath the starless sky. In the Andersons' quiet bedroom, a figure moves, and Margaret stirs softly on her downy couch, like this.
Jim?
Oh, did I wake you, honey?
I was just dozing. Jim?
Yes, dear.
Don't be too upset about tonight.
You mean about Kathy?
I mean about giving up the presidency of the service club. I know it meant a great deal to you.
Yes.
Did they like your speech?
Oh, yes, they loved it.
That's nice.
They thought it was just great. And you know what?
What, dear?
I was reelected.
Good night, Jim.
Good night, dear.
Again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Barkey and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and yours truly, Bill Foreman. So until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee, always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Dragnet, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
That's Father Knows Best, broadcast from November 2nd, 1950. Too many problems with Robert Young, and a great cast that was sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, and he had a long association with Maxwell House Coffee. Remember, he was doing the coffee commercials for a while for Mr. Coffee,
wasn't that?
No, I'm sorry. No, he was actually doing Maxwell House Coffee commercials.
Yes,
he was. On television.
I can picture him sitting there doing the commercials.
So
I remember him.
They sponsored him on radio. They probably were a sponsor on television, and he just continued to support them, or they supported him, and he was, was a spokesperson for them.
I say it made perfect sense.
And
obviously,
of course, he was Marcus Welby, M.D.
Yep.
He had two big television shows, Father Knows Best, and then Marcus Welby, M.D. Lisa, maybe I'll run for governor. Would you vote for me?
probably. It depends who else is running.
Governor
Amari.
Governor Amari. That's a good ring to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it,
probably,
actually.
Probably, yeah.
I was going to say when heck freezes over, but you guys are still, like, in your warm sweaters and stuff down there, so
yeah.
I think heck is frozen.
It has
over.
Already frozen.
Well, I'm being nice.
You mean H-E double hockey sticks?
Yes.
Speaking of hockey, the Hawks won.
How about them apples,
in overtime.
Huh?
I like that.
At the Northwestern game, they didn't win.
What are you
going to
do?
Sad.
Did you see the coach's son, the pictures?
I did.
Oh, he was so distraught. I felt so bad for him.
I saw that.
Yeah, he wasn't in
And
that.
I saw Julia Louis-Dreyfus's son, who went in, like, the last 2 seconds
of
the game, just to say he could play, that he played, but he didn't really play.
Oh, no, he just stood there for...
He's a freshman, so he just kind of was in the game at the end for the sake of being
there. It was like
a
Rudy type of thing?
Well, they were going to lose, so...
all right, well, when we come back from the news, it is Murder by Experts. You're going to love this show. Don't miss it. And real quick, on the Twilight Zone, people have been asking, if you don't air it, how can we hear it? There are three shows you can download for free at the website. If you go to TwilightZoneRadio.com, TwilightZoneRadio.com, there are three shows available absolutely free for you to just download and enjoy them. I think there are three pretty fun shows.
I've listened to them, actually.
All right, so check that out. And it's time now for Murder by Experts. This was a series that came to radio in 1949, and it was hosted by John Dixon Carr. Also, Brett Halliday hosted this as well. It was written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. They brought us The Mysterious Traveler, Sealed Book, and The Strange Dr. Weir. It was produced and broadcast from New York City, and the series featured radio adaptations of mystery stories by masters in the field. Every one of these stories, Lisa, was by a really recognized author. Had great cast members, no major stars, just the great New York pros like Lawson, Zerbe, Carl Weber, Roger DeCoven, Maurice Tarplin, and others. It was a terrific series. It lasted till 1951. This broadcast, June 13th, 1949, is called Summer Heat. It stars Lawson Zerbe. Here's part one of Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each evening at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. Tonight's guest expert is Mr. Hugh Pentecost, author of many memorable thrillers, who has selected a story by a young newcomer you'll do well to watch, Andrew Evans. Be very careful as you listen, for, as Mr. Pentecost says of this thriller, the story has not only a twist, but an unforeseen double twist, which takes one completely by surprise. And now we present Summer Heat. Look now at the old elm. The ivy-covered buildings on the campus of a small Midwestern university. It's a fine June afternoon when you hear laughter and the greetings of the reunion of the class of 36. 12 years have passed, but none of the members of the class seems much older to each other. There's the dark-haired Paul Baxter wandering rather strangely. There are two of his old friends, prosperous now, judged by their clothes, and boisterous in greeting.
Paul Baxter, you old rascal. It's sure good to see you again.
Oh, hello, Steve. Bert, this is a surprise.
Why don't you ever write to us, Paul? You had our addresses.
Why, sure. That's no way to treat old classmates. Just think, 12 years. Yeah. Oh, they sure have gone fast.
Too fast to suit me. Say, Paul, you've turned awful gray for only 33.
Well, he always did take things too seriously. I suppose by now, Paul, you're one of the biggest lawyers in the state, huh? How's Marcia?
Yeah, you were all set to marry her after graduation, remember?
Yes, and you were going to become her father's junior law partner. Oh, you sure had a sweet setup there.
Well, things worked out a little differently. You see, that party we had graduation night... Do you remember it?
Remember it? How can we forget it?
Oh, that was a real blowout. And were you tight, Paul?
You know, that party sort of changed my whole life.
Changed your life? Well, how?
Well, I don't remember much about the party itself. I guess I had too many drinks. In fact, I don't remember anything until I woke up the next morning. I could hear old Trinity ringing. I awoke to find myself on the couch in my living room. It was noon. And the room was hot, stiflingly hot. I remembered I had a date with Marcia and her father at 1 o'clock. I got to my feet. My head ached. There were heat waves before my eyes. Feeling sick, I staggered toward my bedroom and... Then I saw him, a man, asleep on my bed, his back to me. For a moment, I stood there trying to remember if someone had come home from the party with me. But the night before was a total blank. I crossed to the bed, bent over, shook his shoulder. Hey, fella. Hey, it's noon. Wake up. Come on, wake up. As I shook him, he had flopped over and looked up at me with staring eyes. He was dead. And there was a knife in his chest. My hunting knife. I stood stunned, staring down at the body on my bed. The dead man was an utter stranger to me. He was neatly dressed in old clothes. And my knife was in his heart. I killed him. I couldn't remember when or how or why, but I'd killed him. Frantically, I tried to remember what had happened. Was he a panhandler? Someone I'd met on the street and drunkenly brought home with me? I didn't know. I couldn't remember. As I stood there, trying to get a grip on myself, I suddenly realized there was someone at the door. Instinctively, I walked into the living room and towards the door. Just as I was about to open it, I realized the danger of letting anyone into the apartment. I put my ear against the door and listened. I heard voices. Yours, Steve. And yours, Bert.
Hey, Paul, open up. We want to say goodbye.
Come on, Paul. Wake up, will you? We're leaving for California in 15 minutes.
I guess old Paul isn't it.
Yeah. I wonder how he felt when he woke up.
Boy, what a head he must have had.
Still, I sure hate to leave without saying goodbye.
Well, he has our California address. He can write to us. Come on, or we'll miss that train.
Then they were both gone. And I dared to breathe again. I tried to think calmly, figure out what to do. I knew I should call the police, but they might charge me with murder. And what defense could I offer? I thought of Marcia. The slightest scandal and everything would be off. Our marriage, my job, my future. I couldn't call the police. I couldn't call them and sacrifice everything I'd worked for. Somehow I had to get the body out of my apartment, get rid of it before it was found. Then it came to me. My car was in the basement, garage. The dumbwaiter in the kitchen led down to the basement. I could put the dead man in the dumbwaiter, lower him to the basement, get him in my car, and then...
Mr. Paul! Oh, Mr. Paul!
It was Jenny, the cleaning woman. She'd let herself in with a key. I hurried into the living room, closing the bedroom door behind me.
Oh, there you are. A fine time for a rising young lawyer to be getting up.
Oh, hello, Jenny. I guess I overslept. I was at a party last night.
A party, was it? Everyone on the campus is talking about it. And the complaints. Well, now step aside and let me into that bedroom. I got to start cleaning.
Jenny, can't you come back later and do the place?
No, I can't. Now get out of my way.
Jenny, wait. I don't want you to clean up yet.
Paul, what's wrong? Why are you blocking the door like that?
Well, the truth of the matter is, one of the boys had a bit too much last night, and he's in my bedroom sleeping it off.
Oh, well, get him out of there. Take him to a Turkish bath.
Turkish bath. Oh, yes, that's a good idea. Look, Jenny, just give me half an hour to get him dressed and out of here. Then you can come back and clean up.
A half hour, nothing. I'll give you exactly 5 minutes.
All right, Jenny, I'll have him out of here by then.
You'd better.
She was gone, and I had 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. I went into the bedroom and quickly went through the dead man's pockets. They were empty. There was no identification in them. The thin, pinched face told me he was a nobody, a derelict, someone who might never be missed. As I was about to lift him off the bed, the phone rang. The shrill ring filled the room. Hello?
Hello, darling.
Marcia.
How was your stag party last night? Did you miss me?
Miss you?
You sound as though you have a dreadful hangover.
Hangover? Oh, yes. Oh, excuse me a minute, Marcia. There's someone at the door. Yes?
I'll be coming in to clean your room in another minute, Paul.
Jenny.
So get your friend out of there.
Oh, yes, Jenny, yes. Just give me another minute and we'll be out of here. Marcia, I can't talk to you any longer. I'm in a hurry.
Then you haven't forgotten your appointment with Father and myself at 1 o'clock.
No. I may be a little late, but I'll be there.
Paul, you must... mustn't be late. I've told you over and over what a stickler father is for punctuality. He can't stand people who are late for appointments. Well, you recall how furious he was when you didn't
show. I know, Marcia, but I...
You have 45 minutes to shave, shower, and dress. That's plenty of time. And, Paul, wear your gray flannel suit with a blue knitted tie and be sure you're there on
time. Yes, Marcia, yes, but I've got to hang up. Jenny will be coming back any minute and I...
Well, what if she is? Now, darling, you haven't forgotten what we discussed yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon?
Yes. Now, I know Father's brusque and inclined to bully people, but don't let it upset you. After all, it's our future he's...
Marcia, I can't talk any longer. I've got to hang up. Jenny will be back. I've only seconds left.
What in the world are you talking about? Now, when Father asked...
Marcia, I've got to hang up. I've got to. Goodbye. I hung up the phone in my face. It took only a moment to lift him off the bed, carry him into the kitchen, pull the dumbwaiter up and put his body into it. I closed the door to the dumbwaiter, ran out of the apartment and started down the stairs to the basement. I got down to the basement to find Ben, the janitor, leisurely pulling on the dumbwaiter rope. Ben! Oh, Ben!
Oh, hello, Paul. If it's your car you're after, it's there by the door, all washed like you asked.
Thanks, but Ben, stop a minute, will you? I want you to do something for me.
Sure, Paul, just as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter.
Will you stop blowing that dumbwaiter? Stop it here!
Hey, what's wrong with you? You're acting mighty strange.
I'm sorry I shouted like that, Ben. It's just that... Well, there's a package up in my apartment that I'd like you to mail right away. There's a dollar in it for you.
All right. But there ain't no need to rush. Today's Sunday. The post office is closed.
Closed?
Sure. Say, what's the matter with you anyway? Must be the heat. Something awful heavy on this dumbwaiter.
Wait a minute. There's something else.
How's that?
Stop a minute, will you? How can I talk to you while you're lowering that dumbwaiter?
Well, go ahead. I can hear everything you're saying.
And go to that rope. Let's go, you hear.
Hey. You going crazy or something? I've half a mind to call a super and tell him what...
No, don't do that. Ben, up in my apartment, there's a bottle.
Bottle?
Yes, I brought it home last night. It's half full. I wanted you to have it for cleaning the car.
Oh, thanks. I sure appreciate that, Paul. I'll go up and get it as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter. It's almost down now.
But Ben, Jenny just went in to clean. You know how she feels about drinking?
Jenny! Jumping grasshoppers, why didn't you say so? That woman will pour it all down the drain if I don't get there first.
As soon as Ben disappeared up the stairs, I pulled the dumbwaiter the rest of the way down, opened the door, and he fell into my arms. Slinging the body over my shoulder, I staggered with it to my car and swiftly dropped him on the floor in the back. It was an old touring car. The top was long since gone. To hide the body from view, I covered it with an old blanket. A moment later, I started the motor and rolled smoothly out of the basement and into the driveway. As I did, I heard Ben shouting to me from my window.
Oh, hey, Paul, wait a minute. I got something
to... I pretended not to hear Ben calling. Instead, I stepped on a gas.
All right, that's the first portion of Murder by...
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All your favorite classic radio shows, you name it, we have it here Saturday and Sunday nights on the WGN Radio Theater, AM 720, which is the legendary station that airs all over the country. We're heard on about 40 states at night here, parts of Canada. We get texts in from Arizona and all, you know, we had some Florida texts earlier. It's really great to have a powerful signal like this broadcasting these classic radio shows across this great nation. And we're tuning in to Murder by Experts from June 13th, 1949. This is called Summer Heat. It stars Lawson Zerbe. Here's the conclusion of Murder by Experts.
I was almost proud of myself as I drove past the campus. I was in trouble, but I was thinking fast, as a good lawyer should. I'd already decided I'd have to get rid of him by dumping him into the river. As I came to Main Street, driving neither too fast nor too slow, I turned left toward the river. There was very little traffic, and I was just about to speed up when behind me I heard a whistle blowing. It was Dugan, the town's only traffic cop, and he was blowing for me to stop. There was nothing to do but pull over to the curb. As Dugan hurried up to me, I realized I'd driven through a red light. Hello, Dugan.
Never mind that hello, Dugan stuff.
What's the matter? You colorblind?
I'm sorry, Dugan. I just didn't notice the light.
You just didn't notice the light. That's fine. I think you and me had better take a ride over to Justice Miller.
Oh, look, don't run me in, Dugan. It won't happen again.
That's what all you college cut-ups say. Next thing you know, you'll be telling me... What do you got there in the back? Underneath that blanket?
Under the blanket?
You heard me. What's under?
Why, that's Roy Hamilton, one of my classmates.
Yeah, well, what's he lying on the floor under a blanket on a hot day like this for?
Last night at our farewell shindig, Roy had a few too many. He's still out. I'm taking him home.
Where does he live?
At Mrs. Randolph's boarding house.
What are you handing me? That's in the other direction.
Yes, I know, but first I'm taking him to the Turkish bath on Elm Street.
Yeah, well, by the time you get him there, the poor guy will be dead. Ain't you got no sense?
What do you mean?
Look at the way you got the blanket over his head and in this heat, too. I better pull the blanket off his face so he can breathe.
No. I mean, I covered his face on purpose. Suppose Dean Richards or somebody saw Roy like this.
Yeah, that's right. But just the same, I better...
Constable, good to see you for a minute.
I'll be right with you, Jensen.
Johnson.
Where were we, Baxter? Oh, yeah, the guy in the back. He'll smother to death if we don't move the...
It's important. I've got to see you right away.
I'm coming. I won't run you in this time, Baxter, but from now on, stay awake when you're driving.
I will, Dugan.
And for Pete's sake, pull the blanket off that guy's head. Take it easy, Jensen. I'm coming.
As I stepped on the gas, I muttered a prayer of thanks for old Johnson, the janitor of the medical school building, who had called Dugan just as he was reaching for the blanket that covered my passenger. It was a few minutes after one as I drove out of town. I could picture Marcia's father fuming at my lateness. The sun was scorching in my open car as I drove along River Road, looking for a place to hide the body. I needed one where there were trees to hide me. The hours that followed were like a nightmare. The heat was stifling and I could feel my hand shaking on the wheel from nervous tension. I drove and drove and drove, looking for a place to get rid of the body. But the whole countryside seemed to be swarming with people, families picnicking, Boy Scouts camping, kids in swimming, couples in parked cars. No matter where I turned, there was always someone in sight. Little spots danced before my eyes. Waves of faintness swept over me. My hand began to ache, and my head, too. Unbearably, it was already long after 3. I was late for my date with Marcia and her father. That didn't matter. Nothing mattered but to get rid of the body in the back of the car. I had to get rid of it. I had to. I drove, mile after mile, turning from one road to another, searching endlessly for a safe place to stop. Then I realized I was running out of gas. I saw a gas station ahead, and I decided to stop there. It was a risk, but I had to take it.
Okay, mister. That's 5 gallons. Want me to check your oil?
No, thanks. How much?
It's $1.15. Whew, boy, it's hot, isn't it?
Yes, it's hot, all right. Here you are.
That's 1.15 out of 5. Now get your change. Hey, this rear tire looks a little flat.
That's all right.
You want me to check it? Won't take but a minute.
It's all right, I tell you.
Okay, mister, just you say. Your rear door's open. I better shut that for you.
Leave that door alone.
You don't want to drive along with your rear door open. That's funny. There's something in the car jamming it. I better have a...
Leave that door alone and get my change.
But you... All right, mister. Just as you say. Get your change.
He hurried into the station. I looked in the back of the car and saw what had kept the door from closing. It was a hand. His hand sticking out from under the blanket. The attendant had seen it. He would be phoning the police.
Hello?
drove faster and faster, the police would be on the lookout for me now. My whole future depended on what I did in the next few minutes. And then it came to me. In one brief moment, it came to me. The perfect way to get rid of the body. It was so simple, so perfect, that I laughed aloud with relief. A half hour later, I was parked in an alley behind one of the university buildings. It was Sunday, and the place was deserted. Despite my fatigue and aching head, it took me but a moment to carry the body into the basement of the medical building and down the corridor to the basement room where the bodies for the dissecting classes were kept. Where does a wise man hide a leaf? In a forest. Where does a wise man hide a body? In the dissecting room. The room was big and cool and dimly lit. The far end was a long metal tank. I reached the tank and lowered him to the stone floor beside it. I had only to open the tank, slip him inside, and leave. I reached for the lid of the preserving tank and was about to open it when I heard a voice.
Hey, who's in there?
It was Johnson, the janitor. I quickly dropped behind the tank and waited, holding my breath.
I heard you. Stop hiding and come out. I know you're here. I just saw your car through the window. You better come out if you know what's good for you.
He'd seen my car. He knew I was in the room. But if I kept my head, there was a chance, just a chance. All right, Johnson. Here I am.
Baxter, eh? So it's you, is it? You're the one
Johnson, wait a minute. Let me explain.
Explain, huh? After last night, I'm not listening to any fancy stories. I'm the one who gets blamed when... What's that on the floor behind you there?
On the floor? What? I'm nothing, Johnson.
Do you think I'm blind or something? Step aside and let me see what... Why, it's a body.
Yes. It's a body.
So that's it. I thought you were trying to steal one. Instead, you were bringing it.
Yes, I was bringing
it. And just what were you going to do with that gentleman on the floor? Put him back in the tank with the rest?
Yes, that's right. I thought he might not be noticed.
As if I wouldn't have known.
Well, go on. Call the cops. Let's get it over with.
All right, Baxter. Of course, I don't have to call the cops. Nobody knows about this but you and me.
What? What do you mean?
Well, I was going to make a report, but this way there's no harm done, so I might be able to overlook the whole thing if I was persuaded properly.
You might overlook it?
That's right. You just leave this fella to me and there's no fuss because nobody's the wiser.
You'd do that? You'd keep your mouth shut?
I guess I could be persuaded to.
How much?
Hey. Well, suppose we say $50.
$50?
That isn't much, considering what would happen if I reported you.
Oh, no, it isn't $50. That's very cheap to help me cover up a murder.
Murder? More of your jokes. I'm not talking about murder. I'm talking about putting number 37 here back in his proper place.
Number 37?
Yes, 37. He just came in yesterday from the county poor farm, and last night he disappeared. Stolen by you and your drunken friends and dressed up for a joke. Well, I don't like jokes like that. I drove downtown a while back to tell Dugan the constable about it, but... Well, I didn't tell him anything. It would mean trouble for me for being asleep on the job.
Number 37. He was stolen from here last night.
Aye, that's what I said. As long as you've brought him back, there's no harm done. That's why I'm willing to keep it quiet.
Then I didn't kill him. It was just a joke somebody played on me. Just a practical joke.
Here. What's wrong with you?
It's a joke. It's a very good joke on me. This whole afternoon, driving in the heat, trying to get rid of him, it was just a joke.
A joke!
For goodness sake, she's fainted.
Well, that's the story of what happened the day after my graduation party 12 years ago. When I came to, I was in the college hospital. I'd been unconscious a week. They said it was just a slight breakdown brought on by sunstroke. I was all right after a while, but somehow I wasn't interested in law anymore. Marcia and I didn't get married, and I didn't become her father's junior law partner.
Good Lord, Paul. We never knew any of us.
Gosh, Paul, I can't tell you how sorry I am. We never dreamed our gag would turn out like that.
Your gag?
Why, sure. See, after the party broke up that night, we were feeling pretty high, and... well, it was a crazy idea, but we thought it would be funny to steal a cadaver from the medical college and leave it in your room with your knife in it.
It was you? The two of you?
Well, yes, Paul. Gosh, I feel terrible about this, but... well, that day we left, we came up to your apartment to tell you about a little joke, only you weren't in.
We had to rush for our train, but we phoned from the station... Ben, the janitor, answered, and we told him to explain about the cadaver.
I heard him calling, but I didn't stop.
Paul, will you ever be able to forgive us for what happened?
Forgive you? Forgive you? No! No, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you, do you hear? Kill you!
Hey, wait a minute.
No! Get him! Bert,
help me.
Paul! Let him go!
He's choking me! Help me!
I kill you!
Here he is, men. Grab him. Quick, grab him.
Let go of me.
Quick,
now. Get him back to the hospital. I'll kill him.
You hurt, mister? No, I'm all right. But you came just in time. He was trying to kill me.
Why, he sure was. He just went crazy.
Well, I'm sure sorry this happened. You see, he slipped away from the hospital this afternoon. We figured he'd head this way.
The hospital?
Yes. Poor fellow had a bad breakdown just after he graduated 12 years ago. He's been locked up ever since.
Locked up?
Yeah. He's always been perfectly harmless, though. He just went around all the time looking for a place to hide something. This is the first time he ever got violent. I can't figure out what came over him.
And so the curtain falls on Summer Heat, which was chosen by guest expert Joe Pentecost, whose latest thriller, Where the Snow Was Red, will be published next month. We welcome your comments on tonight's story. All letters should be addressed to Murder by Experts, care of Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. Next week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you the story of a woman who pitted her wits against death. A story selected for your approval by Brett Halliday, creator of the rough, tough detective known as Mike Shane. Until then, this is your host, John Dixon Carr, saying good night.
In our cast were Lawson Zerbe, Bryna Rayburn, Ian Martin, Cameron Andrews, Bill Zuckert, and Frank Behrens. Summer Heat by Andrew Evans was adapted for radio by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. Original music was composed by Richard LePage. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in this story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. Phil Tonkin speaking.
This is the world's largest network, serving more than 500 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That is a Murder by Experts, June 13th, 1949, with Summer Heat, starring Lawson Zerbe, also in the cast, William Zuckert. I met William Zuckert at a convention, a classic radio convention. Very nice man, and here he is on this radio episode. John Dixon Carr doing the hosting on Murder by Experts.